You're listening to the Adventist on Fire podcast, aofire.org.
ASI, OCI, and self-supporting ministries are the topic for today. Catching up with Kim Buzel, you'll hear some name-dropping, some old stories that have helped shape the Adventist church you know today, and some new stories as some modern-day pioneers push their way into new fields in the name of service. Kim, how are you doing?
Better than I deserve, brother. Yeah. I am doing better than I deserve.
Good to hear. Really good to have you here with me this week, and was wondering if we could just chat about ASI, OCI, and your role in ministry.
Happy to.
Do you have any experience?
Good subjects.
Do you have any experience with either of those three things?
With ASI, OCI, or ministry?
Your role in ministry.
My role in ministry. Sure.
Because I guess the reason I ask that is because often when people work for the church, they usually have to become a minister. They usually have to do 4 years of theological training. Have you done theology?
That is a very good question. I have no formal theological training as we would normally look at it.
Have you ever done any ministerial roles?
In my 40 years as a Christian, numerous opportunities for ministry and for service.
So what is it you do now? Let's start at the now and we'll work backwards.
Oh, currently, my wife and I have the privilege to work with what we call supporting ministries. And those ministries could be primary schools, orphanages, agricultural training programs, wellness centers. So we work with these ministries throughout Africa. And many of these ministries we've had the privilege to be associated with for 30 years. Mm. And also with ministries in Western Europe. And then once a year for the last 4 years, we've had the blessing to come to Australia.
That sounds like a dream life. How do you actually?
Oh, it is.
How do you get paid to do that?
Oh, the pay is out of this world.
Where can we sign up?
Where can we what?
Sign up.
Where you can sign up?
How would somebody else get involved in that if you do that for a living?
Say do it for a living. That's kind of a stretch of the use of the term.
Yeah.
But we do it for life, I would say that.
Yeah.
And it is a joy, and it's a dream, actually. It's a dream come true to be able to work with ministries, work with people, see God perform miracles.
So primarily at the moment you work with OCI?
Outpost Centers International, that's true. And, probably at least 75% of our time. And then about 3 years ago, almost four, we were asked to serve with ASI Europe as a vice president, and they had requested we give them about 25% of our time.
Hmm. What, I guess OCI is not that well known in some countries. What would OCI be, and how would that differ from ASI?
Right. Outpost Centers International is an umbrella organization for what we call supporting ministries. And there's about 122 projects around the world that are members of OCI. Some are large at Riverside Farm in Zambia, where we spend a good deal of time. And there's probably 200 people living at Riverside. And it's a large commercial farm, training center, clinic, wellness center, primary school. And so it's a large ministry. We train people in agriculture. We train women in tailoring. We train evangelists and health lifestyle educators. We run a wellness center. So it's a fairly large, comprehensive ministry that has had a very positive impact, I would say, on the country, on the people in Zambia for the last 40 years.
And so how does OCI differ from ASI?
Okay. ASI is Adventist Layman Services and Industries. And so ASI is a mixture of people who are involved in ministry and people involved in business. They own and operate, you know, construction companies, manufacturing companies, doctor's offices, any Seventh-day Adventist who's a business person who has more than one employee can apply to become a member of ASI.
Okay, there's some overlap. Can you belong to both?
There is. You can belong to both. And the theme for ASI is sharing Christ in your marketplace. That's encouraging Seventh-day Adventist professionals, business owners, to to share Christ day in, day out in their business. And Outpost Centers is primarily, as I said, ministries. They don't generally, I don't know of any businesses that are members of ASI. They probably wouldn't qualify for membership. But ASI also has ministry organizations as members of the ASI organization. And so there are many OCI members are also members of ASI.
Okay, so you said self-supporting ministries before.
Right.
They're self-supporting in that they just don't get church funding?
Correct. I mean, that would be one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is like at Riverside or Wildwood or Yuchi Pines or many of our ministries that have been around for decades. Hopefully each ministry has an income generator built into its program. That was the plan from the first self-supporting school, which was called Madison in Tennessee. And the idea is that you generate the income needed to cover your operational expenses. And that could be, you know, a wellness center, could be a sanitarium, can be a commercial farm, can be a bakery, whatever it is that produces income in your area.
How is it that self-supporting ministries like this actually benefit the church at large, apart from, you know, the little things that they might do to a couple of people and that they reach out to?
Well, every ministry, its purpose of existence is to be a blessing into the world and to share the Advent message. And so they're evangelistic in nature. They do many, many forms of outreach for serving the community around them. And like at Riverside, we have some 45 Bible workers that we have sent out for the last 20 years to the remote areas of Zambia. And they're committed to, you know, sharing the gospel, preaching the gospel. And so everyone who comes in and is baptized into the Seventh-day Adventist Church joins the local Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that, in turn, they're taught to return their tithes, their offerings, and to be committed to the Advent movement.
So there was once a movement called Youth for Jesus. Is that still around?
Oh, yes.
That's still running.
Yes, it is. And that's a very...
How long's that been running?
I'm going to say we did our first Youth for Jesus in 1999, okay, if my memory serves me right. And it was a dream that a couple of us had of seeing our young people engaged in ministry. And there was a fellow named Pastor Louis Torres and myself. And at that time, I was president of OCI. And it was right after our first Youth for Jesus that I became general vice president for ASI. And that might have had something to do with it, I don't know. But I had been working with the youth programs in ASI for a few years. And I was very thrilled at the impact that our youth could have on a local community. And out of that desire, that vision, we agreed to try to do an evangelistic series, which we did in Orlando, Florida.
And that was the first one?
That was the first one. And we had a young speaker that had been trained at Mission College of Evangelism as a Bible worker. He'd done one series of meetings that went okay from what Pastor Louis Torres said. And he said, but he's a promising young guy. And so we put up a tent in Orlando, Florida, month of July, passed out flyers, went door to door, and started meetings, and the Lord blessed those meetings in an amazing way. We had 12 young people working with us from ages 13 to 17, a couple of Bible workers from Mission College, and by the end of the month, we had 140 people give their lives to Christ and be baptized. We had 3 weddings in that tent. People had been married, some of them up to 8-9 years, and decided they wanted to get married, and it turned out to be the most successful evangelistic series in the history of the Florida Conference. And the young man preaching with no props, with no graphics, just using his Bible each night, was a fellow named David Asherick.
Has he gone on to do anything else interesting?
Yeah, in fact, the next year we did it was such a blessing. The next year we did another Youth for Jesus, and we did it in Grand Rapids. And again, the Lord blessed amazingly. We did things we didn't know always what we were doing. We were very open to trying new things. And in Grand Rapids, we decided that we would run 50 nights straight without a stop, which, you know, the idea of getting people to come out every night for 15 nights without a break, that was a bit illustrious, shall we say.
Yeah.
And we decided to hold two meetings a night, one at 5:45 and one at probably 7:30. The idea was we would see which group of people was the largest, and eventually we would, you know, blend them into one group and just do one meeting a night. But the Lord bless, we had 600-700 people every night coming to each session. So we had anywhere from 1,200 to 1,400 people every evening. We ran 50 nights straight without a stop, and then we went another 2 weeks with, I think, Thursday nights off. And again, it was a historical moment for the church, for evangelism, for outreach, and a new church was planted as a result of those meetings in Grand Rapids.
Nice. So in that Florida meeting, you actually dragged in somebody there as well that has had an impact in Australia.
Oh,
recently.
For sure. It was many, many young people came to those meetings. One young man came in, during the daytime, he was selling cocaine on the streets of Orlando. And in the evening, he was attending these meetings in a tent and listening to God's word. And, you know, through the power of the Holy Spirit, it spoke to his heart. This young man's name is Matt Parra. And Matt Parra gave his heart to Christ and was baptized. And immediately thereafter, he went to Mission College of Evangelism in South Dakota and got training to become a Bible worker. And when we went to Grand Rapids the next year, Matt was one of our Bible workers and part of our evangelistic team.
And that was 99, 2000?
Yep. I'm going to say I believe that's true.
Nice. So have you spent much time with Louis Torres and in other forms of ministry?
Or? Well, those 3 summers we spent together with the Youth for Jesus program, and it was done at the ASI convention. That's how we always did it. And in Orlando, for the first time in the history of ASI, we had baptisms at our ASI convention. And then in Grand Rapids, we had baptisms at our ASI convention. And Louis Pastor Torres became the evangelism coordinator for ASI. And one thing that we did together, I was the vice president at the time and was in charge of evangelism, youth, and then just being the general vice president, is multi-site evangelism was something kind of new, or at least it was new to us. As president of OCI, when I was the OCI president, somebody approached me with this idea to do multi-site evangelism. And the first time we did it was in Honduras, and we did 156 evangelistic series simultaneously and had a great impact on the country of Honduras. Pastor Torres helped us to organize and coordinate that. And in fact, Matt Parra, who had gone to Mission College of Evangelism, along with my son Jabel and my nephew Caleb and some others we sponsored, the agreement was, well, you'll go to Mission College of Evangelism, and when you're done, you will come to Honduras when we do multi-site evangelism, and you will have your first evangelistic series. And so Pastor Torres, you know, was a good help with us with that, and then ASI kind of jumped into that, and they started a project which eventually became known as New Beginnings. And New Beginnings has gone worldwide, and that is the creation of a whole evangelistic series with graphics and text so that whoever's preaching has those tools available to them. And so I believe 10 or 12 teams, evangelistic teams, we all went to the Philippines to hold these meetings simultaneously. And so we all stayed together in one hotel in Butuan City in Mindanao. And then we would travel out to our separate sites. And Jabel and I did a site together with two young ladies from America were part of our team. And every night we would go and we would do health nuggets, and then we would do music, and we would do the evangelistic series. And so, yeah, those were years where Pastor Torres and I had the blessing of working together.
And you were mentioning something earlier about Mark Finley and hanging out with him before
Yeah, Mark, interestingly enough, right when I was baptized, 19 years old, I was in Vermont, southern Vermont, and after I was baptized, our pastor was holding an evangelistic series in the other church. He had two churches, and there was another pastor, actually, who was preaching the series, and so I had, the pastor who baptized me had said, listen, why don't you come up and help us with this evangelistic series, help us as a Bible worker. And so I did that, and I had met Joyce, who's now my wife. We met the weekend of my baptism, and he invited her to come and help with the children's program. So while the evangelist was upstairs preaching, you know, she was downstairs with the children doing arts and crafts and Bible stories and whatever you do with children. So we agreed to help with that. And during that month, this pastor who was doing the series, it had been his desire to become an evangelist. And he got a call to go to Kansas, the state of Kansas, as the conference evangelist. And in southern New England, we were in northern New England, but in southern New England, there was a new young evangelist who had spent 2 years at a place called Wildwood down in Georgia. And he had this dream, this idea, of creating evangelistic teams. And rather than him as an evangelist working alone, he would have a network of young people who would help him with Bible work, visitation, door to door. And he came up with an idea that before he would do an evangelistic series, they would go into the community and they would offer nutrition courses and vegetarian cooking school and 5-day plans to stop smoking. And after they did these things, then they would hold full evangelistic series. And that was Mark Finley. And so we went down and spent some time in Massachusetts with Mark and Teeny and learning their method of doing outreach and doing evangelism. Another thing Mark created was a Daniel and Revelation seminar, which was a prelude to a full evangelistic series. And so after that, Joyce and I, Joyce was asked to join the team and to help with the nutrition schools and the vegetarian and nutrition programs and with the children's meetings each night. And I was invited to go and be a Bible worker. And another young man was invited to come as the piano player and someone in charge of all the music for the meetings.
Did you ever preach any of these meetings yourself? Or?
No, not during those days.
You were just there to encourage.
I was there as a Bible worker, and the pastor that we went with that became the evangelist for the conference, he would preach all the meetings.
Did you preach any future ones with those multi-site evangelists?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
are they very similar to a Share Him type?
Yes, exactly. Actually, Share Him grew out of that Honduras experience. Elder Folkenberg had just transitioned out of being the president of the General Conference. And so I called him up. I had remembered that Elder Folkenberg had been president of the Inter-America Union, or Central America Union, I guess it was. And so as OCI was coordinating these 156 meetings simultaneously, we needed to do some groundwork. And so actually Elder Folkenberg flew down there with me. I had called Elder Folkenberg to fly down there. We flew down together, met with the church leaders, and Elder Folkenberg took a series of meetings. And he did one in San Pedro Sula, which turned out to be, you know, he had a very large attendance at his meetings. And at the end of this experience, Elder Folkenberg was really excited about what he had participated in. And he grabbed this vision of multi-site evangelism. And a couple weeks later, a donor, a very significant donor, communicated with me, and he said if we would take Elder Folkenberg into OCI and to have him be responsible for coordinating multi-site evangelism, that they had a check for $3 million to back that up, to support that program. And so Elder Folkenberg came down, and we're visiting our office there at OCI about this concept. And And I love Elder Folkenberg. We've been good friends for a number of years. And I said, you know, Elder Folkenberg, I welcome you with open arms. There's no question. I said, but you have worked for the denomination all your adult life, from being a pastor to a conference president to the general conference president, and just kind of to jump out of that, you know, at a time that is, you know, problematic and having trials in your relationship as a denominational worker. I said, you know, I'm ready for that to happen, but let's pray about it. Let's think about it. It may be that your lifelong commitment as a denominational worker might continue. And anyway, as we explored that, Elder Folkenberg and OCI and the people involved realized OCI could continue to do it, but we would be supportive and encouraging of Elder Folkenberg to do the same. And it's obvious how originally he called it global evangelism, and then there was discussion about the name, and he changed the name to Share Him. And Ken Coonley, who was the pastor, who was the president of the Carolina Conference, took him on as a paid conference pastor, but with the commitment to do this. And Share Him became an amazing tool to go global. And thousands and thousands of people have gone out to Share Him programs, and it's just been terrific. And the Lord bless Elder Folkenberg's efforts abundantly.
So there's another brand that I'm aware of called Adventist Help, and I'd like to hear the story behind that starting up and maybe where that's headed.
Yeah, that's an interesting initiative. That has grown out of ASI Europe. Almost 2 years ago, about a year and a half ago, ASI Europe was having this convention in Budapest. ASI Europe has a convention every 2 years. And so we chose Budapest. And while we were there, we found over 3,500 refugees in the train station in downtown Budapest. And that was just something to behold, to see people on the move, having left their homes, sleeping on mattresses, on blankets, on cardboard, and all here gathered around the central train station in Budapest. And during that convention, there were ASI members from the United States that came to participate and attend, friends that I've known from years gone by. And one of them came to me and he said, Kim, can you get me 15 minutes with the ASI Europe board? I would like to share with them a burden I have for the refugees and a vision of what I think could possibly take place. And so as we had our board meeting later that night, I presented that request to the board, and they, after we did our business, were very happy to sit and listen to this vision that this brother had. And his thought was, is that, you know, we can't bring the gospel freely into Syria or into Iraq or into these countries that are Islamic states, you know, that they're closed. You're not going to go and preach on their corner. You're not going to pass out literature. You're not going to go door to door. But now they are leaving their country under duress, and it's an opportunity to share Christ and to minister to their needs in a very practical way. So as he made that appeal, he said, listen, I can't do this, but I believe if ASI Europe could participate in this, that you guys could do it. And I'll commit 100,000 euros for that to happen if you will be willing to make an attempt. And so we discussed it with him, and then we had him go out, and then we discussed it some more, and we prayed about it. And at the end of the day, we accepted that we would make an attempt to serve the refugees.
Whose way?
ASI Europe.
Yeah.
So ASI Europe would try to do something. And to be honest, we had no idea what that would look like. We agreed the need was there, the opportunity was there, that we should serve, that we should help, but we didn't have any specific tangible way that we would do that. And as Vice President for Evangelism for ASI Europe, I received the applications for people that need funding for different outreach projects. And so they said, listen, why don't we just have you be in charge of this, And you can get proposals from our ASI chapters around Europe of how they would use resources to help minister to refugees. And that's kind of the idea that we left the meeting with. Well, shortly thereafter, one of our vice presidents, Christiana Thies from Switzerland, she works in the corporate world and had decided to take a sabbatical and had been doing some classes at Andrews University. And she says, listen, Kim, I have quit my job. I'm just working on my studies. And if you need help with this, I'm very willing and I'm available to help pursue how we might serve the refugees. And my heart was, well, praise the Lord, you know, this is terrific. And so Christiana decided to have a friend join her, and they went down to Greece to see the refugees landing firsthand. And they went out to the island of Lesbos, where these little rubber rafts are coming in, you know, crowded with people, and landing on the shore. And she came back, gave us a report, and said that it would be great if we could set up a medical clinic, urgent care for these people as they come in from these boats. And so Emmanuel, who's Romanian, he's our secretary. He says, hey, in Romania, we have a bus. We use it for health expos. Maybe we could get it and we could outfit it for a clinic. And so that's what we did, and parked it, you know, 10 meters away, right on the shores where these refugees are coming in by the hundreds and by the thousands each day.
And these were being, the refugees were being generated or coming from where?
They're coming from Turkey.
Yeah.
You know, they would leave Syria, come into Turkey, and then come from Turkey to Greece and land on the island of Lesbos. And that's when Adventist Help was created. We weren't sure what we were going to call it, but we realized we needed to have an identity. And we came up with a logo and a brand, and we put it out there. And we were the first organization, the first people to be offering urgent care to these people arriving. And we were based there, and after we got based, within the next few weeks, other NGOs and other organizations kind of gathered around and started to receive and help the refugees when they arrived. Up until that point, it was just the people living on the island Lesbos that carried this burden themselves.
And I believe the medical space that you'd created in that bus became bit of hot property.
Yes, it did. It was really, as Joyce and I were there, it was really amazing to see other physicians from other countries, be it Israel, be it the United States, Canada, Sweden. They wanted to come and help because the plight of the refugees was being, you know, televised on the media, and people were responding, and they would come down, but they had no place to be. And so they wanted to come and, hey, can we be in the bus with you guys? So early on, we opened our doors, we opened our arms, and we invited other people that wanted to help to join us. It had its challenges, you know, to get doctors from different countries, all trying to get them to work together and also maintain your program, had its challenges, but it was a great blessing. We had Greek physicians, Israeli physicians, American, from all over the world. And it was very, very affecting. We had a Greek doctor that came, and he, because he was Greek and he was licensed, he felt that he knew what needed to happen. He started to boss our people around, our Adventist Help team. And that wasn't all that much appreciated. And our doctor, who's been most faithful working with us, Michael John, Ben Horsten from South Africa, was a bit troubled by it. And I said, look at Michael, I've known him since he was a child. I said, listen, the Bible tells us a man's gift will make room for him. So let's not have conflict. Let's not, you know, if these people want to push us out of the way, we don't need to kind of fight our ground, but this is our home, and let's just see how we can accommodate them. And so this doctor's name was Nico, and day by day you could see him soften. He was a pediatrician. And so one morning a boat came in, and it had tipped over, and people were wet, and they're having hypothermia. And this small boy, probably 6, 7 years old, came in, and he was turning blue, and it was not a good scene. And Nico worked with him and you know, got him revived and got him warm. And, you know, you take his clothes off, dry him up, get him in dry clothes. And so after we went through that process, I went to Nico and I put my arm around him. I said, Nico, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you being here and for helping. And he looked at me almost in tears and he says, Kim, no, don't thank me. He says, thank you. Thank you guys with Adventist Help for leading out and for being here that I can come and serve along beside you. And it was just thrilling. It was to see those barriers and to see his spirit break down. And then on a Sabbath morning that week, I was there early just with Nico, and a boat came in, and again, the people were wet and drenched. And so we would get them out of the boat and onto the shore, and then we would have a place for the ladies to change and place for the men to change. And we had had a young lady, probably in her 30s, who was an Israeli doctor, a very nice young lady. And Nico came from inside the bus, and he was very affected. And he looked at me, he says, Kim, he says, working here with you people gives me hope for humanity. He says, right here, we have an Israeli doctor taking care of this elderly Syrian lady who's a Muslim and looking after her like she's her own mother, gently and tenderly, to see an Israeli doctor caring for an elderly Muslim Syrian woman. There is hope for humanity. And so we had so many experiences like this while we were there. It just thrills your heart because barriers get broken down and nobody knows who Adventists are. None of the Syrians arriving. The refugees don't know what an Adventist is. And most people in Greece don't know what an Adventist is. And so we really had an opportunity to serve not just the refugees, but to serve the local Greek population. And we would provide medical care to all the people in the village where we were based. And it was thrilling. It was really thrilling to see opportunities for ministry.
What a blessing. How long was that bus there?
I'm going to say we were there for probably 3 or 4 months, maybe longer. You know, I have a very good forgetter. But eventually, the European Union got an agreement with Turkey to stop allowing the boats to come. Mm-hmm. Europe had, you know, had received, you know, hundreds of thousands of refugees and basically got to the point where they felt they were saturated. And rather than taking people into the European Union, they would not allow the refugees to leave Greece. And then Turkey would not allow the refugees to leave Turkey. And so funding was given to Turkey, funding was given to Greece to look after the refugees. And so at that point, there was no sense in being located on the shores because the boats weren't coming. There were very few. But more permanent refugee camps were being set up because once the refugees have to leave the island of Lesbos, then they go to the mainland. And so at that point in time, Adventist Help was invited to come and to be based at a refugee camp about 40 minutes outside of Athens. Mm. And we continue the work in that refugee camp today.
Wow. And so who funds that?
That is a good question. The Lord funds it. You know, we had that 100,000 to start with.
Yeah.
And
gone in about 3 days.
that was quickly used. And the thrilling part of it was, you know, the 100,000 is just a small fraction of the finances that have poured in to the work of Adventist Help. Because all the volunteers, all the doctors, all the nurses, all the coordinators that come fly themselves, their own travel from anywhere they are in the world, and they work for free. And a doctor may be there 2 weeks or a month, and then another doctor will come and another nurse will come. And it's all self-funded by that, by their own resources. But we do have operational expenses. And just through word of mouth and people hearing about the work of Adventist Help, they have sent resources in. And so our doors have been open up until today. The doors are open. And we don't have a good plan on how we're going to pay the bills every month. I wish I could tell you, but it was a faith venture from the beginning. And that's how we continue in Greece. So
apart from that one operation, what more?
Well, what happened was something very interesting. Elder Neil Wilson, last year, I'm going to say about a year ago, had made a visit to Iraq. And when he saw how many refugees there are in Iraq, then he appealed to Adventist Help. And he said, listen, can you do something for the refugees in Iraq like what you've been doing in Greece? And so we spoke about that as an executive committee, ASI Europe Executive Committee, about responding to that appeal from Elder Wilson. And so the first thing that needed to happen from our participation was for someone from the ASI Europe Executive Committee to go to Iraq. And so we discussed that, and nobody was really willing to go. You know, we all had reasons why we couldn't go to Iraq. And finally, I don't think the men that are involved, none of our wives were kind of keen on us going to Iraq. There's a lot of activity with ISIS, a lot of violence, a lot of bloodshed going on. But when it came apparent that we weren't going to be able to take the next step forward until someone did an investigatory trip, my wife and I talked about it, and she said, look, you know, I know you want to go anyway, so if no one else is going to go, you know, go and see what you can learn. And so last July, I made a trip there to Iraq, and some folks from the States came over to participate in that investigatory trip. And finally, as an outcome, this week, we have broken ground in Iraq, and we have 4 40-foot containers that we're setting up. One will be a pediatric ward. One will be general, probably one for women and one for offices. And as you know, right now, people are flooding out of Mosul, thousands of people every day seeking to escape from being held under ISIS. And when I was in Iraq, when you meet these people, it's unimaginable the lives they've been living for the last year and a half, 2 years, as they've been under ISIS rule. And they live with stress that's unimaginable, because there's only one penalty in the ISIS program for any infraction. That's the death penalty. As you visit with these people that are coming out of Mosul, you know, the stress that they've been living under for the last 18 months, 2 years, whatever it's been, is that ISIS, for any infraction of the law that you make, they have one penalty, and that's the death penalty. So if you go out with your wife and she looks the wrong way at one of these guys, and death penalty. If you don't pray fervently enough, if they don't think you're being faithful in your devotions, death penalty. They don't put you in prison. They don't have any other system. And so when they escape from this, you can just appreciate they're escaping from a living hell. And then as things went on, it deteriorated to where there's no water, there's no food, people are hungry, and they're in dire need. And so it's a privilege for us to have been invited by, not just by Elder Neil Wilson made the appeal, but the Iraqi government is eager. When I was there in July and making the trip, we went to the largest medical facility in Kurdistan, and a fine medical director. He's an Iraqi fellow that had been in the UK for a number of years and doing very well. And he made a decision. I need to go back to Iraq and serve my countrymen. And as we were in the hospital, he says, my medical staff haven't been paid for 3 months. We haven't been able to buy medicines for 3 months. We have no financial resources, and they've got all the refugees to care for, as well as the local population. And he appealed, anything you can do to help us, and whether you send medicines, whether you send us doctors, whether you send us interns, whether you send us nurses, send us equipment, whatever you can do to help, please come and help. And so it's thrilling for us to see arms open in an Islamic country to come, please come help us. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting set up there now, and we're just looking forward to the opportunities we will have. But in a camp with 70,000 refugees in Iraq. We had more equipment in our 40-foot container in Greece than they have in that camp for 70,000 people. And so we're bringing most of our equipment from Greece because things have, you know, slowed down there medically. We'll bring that. We're buying new equipment. And people from all over the world, as they hear that Adventist Help is doing this, they're signing up and they're saying, here's $25,000 for an ultrasound. Here's $20,000 for this piece of equipment here. And they're sending the resources needed to equip our four containers to provide good medical care to the people fleeing.
Wow, it's amazing. Just to finish up, I guess, I'd be interested to know what advice you would give yourself looking back on 40 years of service. What advice would you give to your 18-year-old self on getting involved in ministry and the Lord's work?
Wow, that's a challenging question. Move forward prayerfully. I guess that would be one thing I would say, but move forward, you know. God has a work for us to do. He's got a wonderful life plan. He says, I know the desires I have for you. And as we enter into service, just to be willing to respond and to be used. And we have no idea the work that God is able to accomplish. You know, all of the things that we've seen, my wife Joyce and I and our sons have seen in ministry, is simply amazing. When you see what God can do and what he does do, just because people are willing. So that I guess would be my appeal. Have a willing heart to serve.
Is there anything that you tell yourself or repeat to yourself when you wake up in the morning to keep yourself motivated?
Well, probably many things, but Apostle Paul says the love of Christ constraineth us. And that's really where the greatest motivation and power for service, as we look, as we appreciate the love that God has for us, then we experience the joy and the privilege of sharing that in tangible ways, in any way God will open up. And every day I'm mindful, you know, this world is enveloped in an atmosphere of grace as real as the air we breathe. And God's goodness and his grace and his kindness is constantly with us. And it's with us to bless us, and it's also with us to make us a blessing to those around us.
Awesome. So if somebody's passionate about any of these things, how could they get in touch with you?
The easiest way, email that follows me around the world.
Yeah.
And it's africa@outpostcenters.org. That's the email address. And I'd love to hear from anyone. And even though I'm focused on Africa, OCI has projects all over the world. You could visit the OCI website, outpostcenters.org. And there's a map there of the world, and it shows where different ministries are. It talks about the different needs of different projects. And more than that, God may put it in, we're hoping and praying, God puts it in the hearts of his people for them to create a ministry themselves. And we're here to try to encourage and nurture that and support people in the work that God's called them to do.
Thanks for your time, Kim. It's been a blessing.
Go Ye, a strategic board game that's more Adventist than Doug Batchelor eating haystacks on Sabbath. In Go Ye, players spread the gospel by investing in spiritual gifts, mission trips, and church organizational growth, while planting churches across a custom world map of 58 conferences and 10 divisions. The goal is to have the most TMI before the second coming, but will the GC president, the missionary, or the adventrepreneur get the biggest crown? Go Ye to aofire.org to register your interest.